Hello, welcome to the Beef Cattle Health and Nutrition Podcast, episode 46. I'm your host, Dr. John Campbell. Before we get to today's guest, I want to give a shout out to another excellent podcast. The Canadian Beef Cattle Podcast, hosted by the Beef Cattle Research Council, is now live and features the most popular content from beefresearch.ca in a new audio format. Tune in every Tuesday to hear straightforward insights, expert information, and a wealth of practical knowledge on topics ranging from animal health and beef quality to grasslands management, feed efficiency, and environmental stewardship. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast streaming platform or find weekly episodes on the BCRC podcast page at beefresearch.ca/podcasts. That's the Canadian Beef Cattle Podcast. Check it out. This week, I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Chris Clark back to the podcast. Dr. Clark's a colleague of mine at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. He's an expert in large animal internal medicine, and Chris is well known around the college for his practical knowledge, and he's a fantastic teacher. Today, Chris and I are going to chat about the basics of treating calves for scours. Let's get started. Hi, Chris. Welcome back to the podcast. I know you've been here before for us, but perhaps I'll have you tell the audience a bit about your background again before we get started.
No, I'm happy to be back, John. My name's Chris Clark, originally from the UK. I've been on staff at the vet school here in Saskatoon now for almost 25 years. I work in the large animal medicine section, and so I tend to work more in the clinic than out in the field.
Okay, so today our topic's about treating scours or treating calf diarrhea, which is a pretty common issue at this time of year. I should say we're recording this in early March, so
early April.
Thank you. Yes, days fly. Early April, and so it's a common issue we have in at calving time, and one of the more common diseases we treat in calves. So it's still an important disease, and we probably should mention right from the start that the best way to deal with it is prevent it in the first place. So maybe you want to talk about that first of all. What are some of the important factors we need to think about when we're trying to prevent this disease? We've talked about this on the podcast before, so we'll maybe be brief on this.
No, actually, and it's funny because, you know, when I start thinking about calf scours, the first thing I think about is the situation back in the 90s when I first came here, when like we would be deluged in the clinic here. Like we didn't have room to have all the scouring calves. And now we're lucky if we see one or two in a year. And so things have changed dramatically, which means we've really learned how to control this disease. You know, it's not a magic treatment. We've learned how to control it. And so I think the big things are, we've had vaccines for a long time, and those vaccines haven't changed. But you've got to remember you're vaccinating the dam. And so she's going to develop an immunity, but the importance of colostrum, I know you guys have talked about colostrum here before, but like there's no point vaccinating against calf scours if you're not going to manage the colostrum appropriately. Because we know these vaccines work, there's good immunity, but it transfers with the colostrum. So making sure your calves get colostrum, make sure they get lots of colostrum early. If they can't get colostrum, the colostrum replacers are big. Like that's something that has changed in the last 30 years. It used to be if you didn't have colostrum, you were out of luck. Now, you know, products like the Saskatoon Colostrum Company, et cetera, there's really good products out there to boost the immunity in the calves. And honestly, I'm not sure I have data to support this, but what I honestly believe is the biggest factor has been the change in calving season. You know, everybody used to calve in February. It's minus 20. You're calving into March. You never know when spring's going to hit. You end up calving in a sloppy corral. Everybody's piled on top of one another. Now with May calvings, we've got calves being born at great ambient temperatures. They're out of pasture. They're spread out. You kind of reduce that density, which reduces the infection pressure. And, you know, it's funny, when I lecture on calf scours now, the students look at me strangely because they just don't see it the way we used to see it. It was we used to have a rule that no one could take vacation between January and April because we were too busy in the clinic. And now we just don't see those cases. So honestly, that change in calving season, spreading out the calves, probably the biggest impact, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Perhaps we're using vaccines more effectively. Yep. Perhaps we're doing a better job of not having big calves, and so they get colostrum and all those other factors too. But I think you're absolutely right. Part of the best part is spreading them out, and spreading them out because the cows are carrying most of these pathogens. Yeah. They're walking around with it in their feces, and it's exposure to mature cow feces that's the big risk factor.
Well, that starts the outbreak, but then the calves, once they get diarrhea, that stuff is loaded. So it is the amount of, you know, cow feces to start with, but then the calf's feces become this really danger thing. So the more you spread that out, the better.
And we did a really good episode with Dr. Homorowski back early in the podcast. You want to go back? I can't remember the episode number off the top of my head, but it's a great one where she talks about those factors and how to prevent that and some real practical ways of dealing with that on the ranch. So let's briefly talk about some of the causes of calf scours. I've had other guests on the podcast in previous episodes talk about that, but it's an important aspect for how we treat these diseases.
Yep.
So what are some of the more common causes of calf scours?
Well, I think when you're talking about neonatal calf scours, there's really a big four. And these four are really the mainstay of what we deal with. So if the calf is under 5 to 7 days of age, you're probably dealing with a toxigenic E. coli. This is a very specific E. coli that only affects young calves. It's not the same E. coli that we see later in life. Then you get rotavirus comes in, probably that 7 to 10 day window. That's when it starts. And then you get coronavirus probably starting from about day 12. And then you have cryptosporidium sitting there probably from about day 8 or 9 onward. And, you know, John, you're like me, when we've dealt with outbreaks, it's rarely one. It's often these things layering on top of one another. But I will just say the E. coli, which is probably what the vaccine works best against, we rarely see anymore. Like, it's rare to see E. coli scours. So it's much more commonly the two viruses and cryptosporidium, which is a little parasite. Those are the big three. You can get into salmonella, you can get into clostridium, but those things are actually really rare, and I don't think they help. When we're seeing problems, it's those three that are the biggest problem.
Right, and those are the ones we'll focus on today. Yeah. We get into salmonella, and later older calves might get coccidia and other things, but those three, as long with cryptosporidia, we're seeing more of that in beef cow herds recently too. And as you say many times, it's associated with some of the viruses as well.
Yeah.
Well, so why do these calves die? They get scours, and some of them, if we don't treat them adequately, they die. Why do they die?
You know, that is the crux of it. That really is the crux. And it's always interesting to ask our students that. And they're like, well, they got scours. And you have to get people thinking. And the reason almost any animal with scours dies is because it runs out of water. It becomes dehydrated. Because every time they pass scours, they're losing a lot of water and some electrolytes. They feel sick. They don't want to drink. They don't have a huge fluid reserve. And they just dehydrate and die. So, you know, they don't die of scours per se, they die of dehydration. And that is the thing you have to understand, because then you can understand why we treat them the way we do.
Exactly. They have a fluid deficiency, not an antibiotic deficiency.
So true.
So how do we assess hydration in a calf? That's an important part of sort of determining about whether a calf even requires treatment. So we can see if a calf has loose feces, and that's fairly obvious, and you'll see the staining back there. How do we decide if they're actually dehydrated, or if this is just maybe a bit of milk scours because they drank a bit too much milk in one feeding?
Yeah, no, and I think, so the first thing is, if you can catch them. If you can't catch them, they're not dehydrated. Like, you know, if you're bombing around on a quad or something, then they don't need treat. If you can catch them, three things that you really want to look at. So the first thing you can do, just pop a finger in their mouth and feel their gums. And their mouth should be wet and slimy and covered in saliva. And if you stick your finger in their mouth and it sort of sticks to their gums, that makes me really nervous. I mean, to get super technical about the two things that we use in the clinic all the time is, the first thing you want to look at is their eyes. And, you know, calves' eyes, they protrude a little bit. So the moment they stop protruding, and very importantly, if you can see a space between the eyelid and the eye, they are profoundly dehydrated. So you look to see whether the eyes are sinking. And the other thing you do is you just grab hold of a fold of skin on the side of the neck, just pinch it, just gently between your finger and thumb and lift it and let go. And what should happen is that skin should just spring right back. If you're listening to this right now, you can do it on your own arm. Just pinch your skin, let go. It springs back as if it's made of elastic. If that pinch persists, that means they don't have enough fluid in the tissues under their skin and they're dehydrated. So any animal with tacky gums, sunken eyes, what we call a skin tent, that is the pinch that stays up, needs fluids.
Okay. And we can also sort of approximately estimate how severely dehydrated they are by how severe those signs are, correct?
Yes. I mean, it's something we do in the clinic all the time. Basically, they always say you can't, what we do is we measure how much fluids the animal has lost as a percentage of their body weight. So you can't estimate less than 5. It doesn't work. When you start to see the eyes sink and the skin start to tent up, that's a sign that they're more than 5% dehydrated. And the reality is animals will die at about 12% dehydrated. So, you know, once you start to see the eyes sinking or the skin tenting, you know, you can grade the scale, et cetera, but, you know those animals need treatment. And it's not a I'll do it later kind of thing. They need to be treated now.
So does the degree of dehydration determine the treatment regime that we put them through?
You know, it does to some extent. You know, more dehydrated animals are generally going to need more aggressive treatment. But in the end, you need to get treatment into these calves. And there's no doubt that if I can do it, I want to give the fluids by mouth because it's easier, it's less invasive, there's less problems with it. So whenever I can, I want to give fluids by mouth. And I'll be honest with you, and I know a lot of people don't always like this suggestion, but over the years, if you're going to give them fluids and you need to give them typically at least 2 liters as a treatment, I know I say by mouth, but I'm talking by esophageal feeder. You know, you see people trying to feed this stuff from bottles. A beef calf doesn't know what a bottle is. Like it knows what its mother is. It doesn't know what a bottle is. It doesn't know how to suck a bottle. When you mix these electrolytes up, if you ever sniff them, they don't smell good. Like they're pretty rank smelling. You wouldn't want to drink it. The calf doesn't want to drink it. And if you try to feed with a bottle, you end up wearing most of it. So what you need to do is learn how to use an esophageal feeder. I know people get very nervous about them, but they're very safe if you follow the rules. And you can get a veterinarian to teach you how to do it. And you can give 2 liters in 20 seconds. It's easy to do. And so I always want to use oral electrolytes. But what matters to me is, can I do that safely? And so to me, the amount of dehydration is not the absolute cutoff. It's can I give the fluids orally? And so the test is to put your finger in their mouth. And if they get their tongue around your finger and play with it and start to make a sort of sucking motion, that means their reflexes are working and they'll swallow the feeder. If you get a calf that's flat out and you stick your finger in its mouth and nothing happens, do not try to pass an esophageal feeder. Nothing's going to go with you. You're going to end up in the lungs. Even if you do end up in the esophagus, that calf is so flat, its guts aren't going to be working. It's not going to be able to absorb the electrolytes. So in my mind, that's the classic cutoff. If a calf will suck your finger, try oral electrolytes. If it won't suck your finger, you're going to need expert help from a veterinarian.
Right. And we should add, it might be a weak suck reflex. The calf is not feeling well or is still sick, but it has some suckle reflex.
Yeah. When the tongue does nothing, you know you're in trouble.
Okay. There's some great resources on the Beef Cattle Research Council website on assessing dehydration and some of those tools. So I'd recommend going there. I'll maybe put some of the links in the show notes. Along with this dehydration, these calves are losing more than just water from their digestive tract. What are some of the other things that we need to replace when we treat these calves?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big thing is they're losing regular salts, right? So they're losing, I mean, it's in essence, table salt is disappearing. So that's sodium and chloride. They're also losing potassium. So that's pretty standard stuff. The thing about calves that actually makes them different from a lot of species is that they're losing bicarbonate. And that is really, really important. I know you can Google it and you're going to find out about scours in piglets. You can find out about it in foals. You can find out about it in human babies. But what makes calves different is that they're losing bicarbonate. And bicarbonate's incredibly important because it exists in your blood to control how much acid and alkali are building up in the blood. And the body needs to keep it really, really precise. And when you lose bicarbonate, the amount of acid in the blood starts to go up. And that's the other thing that really lays these calves out. There's dehydration, which makes you feel like crap, to be honest with you. Anybody who's ever had a hangover, they maintain that like at least 50% of the feelings of a hangover are dehydration. So dehydration makes you feel terrible. As the acid builds up in your blood, it has horrendous impacts on brain function. And these calves become woozy, they become uncoordinated. To be honest, they look drunk. And so it's vitally important that we try to correct that lack of bicarb. And the other thing that fluids do, which it's less of a deficiency being lost through the back end, but as these calves get sicker and start to crash and they don't nurse, they start to run out of sugar. And sugar is the main energy source for these calves. And so it's vitally important that we try to get some sugar into them. Sugar is also really important because the only way to get fluids into the body through the gut wall is exactly the right concentration of sugar, salt, and water. And that way the body absorbs this stuff. And the final thing is we need these fluids to be warm. Glucose is the energy source. It allows the calf to maintain its body temperature. So you need to give warm fluids. The other thing these calves do is they get cold. So when I see a flat out calf, yes, I'm worried about dehydration, but I'm also worried about acidosis. I'm worried about hypoglycemia, that is lack of glucose. And I'm worried that their body temperature is dropping. And so all of those things are bad, but warm fluids literally fix every single one of those things. So warm fluids are this incredible treatment for the flat out scouring calf.
So you've mostly touched on this already. So this blood pH dropping is a huge issue. We call it acidosis.
Yeah.
How do we recognize that a calf's acidotic? You've touched on it.
Yeah, already, it's really the doziness, dopiness, drunk thing. I mean, in essence, dehydration makes you feel terrible. It gives you a headache, at least we know from humans. When they get acidotic, what tends to happen is they can't stand, right? So when you start to see calves with diarrhea that can't stand, it's often the acidosis that's more important than the dehydration. So actually, you know, suck reflex reducing, unable to stand, and then eventually unable to lift their head and just laying flat out on their side. Acidosis, especially in calves over a week of age, is probably the biggest driver of all those signs. Although the dehydration is going to kill them, it's the acidosis that's making them look so terribly sick.
Yeah, we've seen some outbreaks with coronavirus in particular, where the acidosis is far more important than the diarrhea. And in fact, they may not even have much diarrhea yet. So we see that a lot. So we have a couple of options for treating these calves. We can give them oral fluids like you've talked about and electrolyte replacements, obviously. So we can do it orally or we can do it intravenously at the vet clinic. Yeah. Can you describe which calves need to be taken to the vet clinic and given IV versus those that we might be fine to just go ahead and treat on the farm with oral electrolytes?
Yeah, it comes back to what I was talking about earlier. It's really if you can get a tube into the esophagus, so the calf has got enough tongue motion to assist the tube back through the pharynx into the gullet, then I would try oral electrolytes. I really would, because you can do it on farm. It's a lot less hassle. It's going to cost you a lot less to do it that way. But if they can't lift their head, if there's no motion in the mouth, you can't get the esophageal feeder in, then really your only option is to go to IV fluids. And obviously I understand that's going to involve getting that animal up, getting it across to the clinic, which may be a considerable drive. There's going to be vet fees and there's going to be costs involved in treating that. The good news is the prognosis is pretty good. I mean, you know, historically, if you could get a calf here and it was just about breathing, there was like a 95% chance it was going to go home. Like the prognosis is good, but you know, you're going to be looking at somewhere between, depending on how bad it is, between $400 and $800 as the treatment, right? So that's got to be factored in, hopefully at the lower end, but it certainly can get up there. So I think that's really what it comes down to is, can I treat this calf orally? If I can, let's treat it orally. If I can't, you're really going to need veterinary involvement.
Right. And that cost is obviously going to depend on the severity and how long it's hospitalized and all those sort of things.
Yeah.
Let's get into the details about using those oral electrolytes. So how often? We talked about the route and talked about how tubing them is probably much more efficient and a better way of getting those fluids in quickly. How often do we have to treat them? How long? What about drinking milk or having access to the dam? All those sort of things.
There's a lot of stuff here. So basically, if you were to buy a sachet of electrolytes from your veterinarian, the instructions on the back, you need to follow those instructions, but most of them are pretty similar. And so most of these things will recommend that the calf be treated with 2 liters twice a day. That's a pretty standard recommendation. Certainly when calves are really sick, you know, occasionally we will go off that label as veterinarians and recommend that they maybe be used up to 4 times a day in really severe cases. You know, and that is acceptable. For the most part, if I'm treating on farm, I wouldn't separate the calf from the dam. If the dam can be with the calf, I'd get them into a pen, leave them together. It keeps the bond in place. And the great thing about the new electrolytes, the electrolytes we're using today, is that they've been specifically designed to not interfere with milk absorption. And so once the calf starts to feel better, it can nurse its mother. And that's really important because milk has got way higher sugar in it than any of the electrolytes. And so it needs those sugars. The fats are full of energy as well. And very importantly, it's kind of one of these things we don't think about very much, but the viruses and cryptosporidium are damaging the gut. They're literally shredding the lining of the gut. And the gut has to heal after an infection. And the thing about the gut that's different is the gut gets its nutrition from the gut contents. And so milk, which has got proteins in it and fats, is the ultimate solution to actually heal the gut. So we want these calves to nurse. We want them to take in milk. And so whenever possible, I want the calf to be with its mother as much as possible and continue to nurse. I will just add one other thing while we talk about the practicalities of treatment. And this is something I learned working on farms, which is, if you get up and you go out and you find a scaring calf, you know, you swear, you do whatever, but then you have to go back to the house to make the electrolytes. And then you come back to the field and then you got to find the calf and you've got to treat the calf. And it's an incredibly time intensive process. The biggest advice I can give to anybody is, if you know there's a possibility of scours, is to make up the calf scour solution in advance and get some thermos flasks. And take it with you when you leave the house. And then if you see a scaring calf, you've got it right there and you can use it. And it cuts out that attitude of, oh, I've got to go back to the farm, because you've got the stuff, just get ready to use it. So every time you go out, take some electrolytes, take a stomach tube, and you're ready to treat. The other thing that's really important is, again, I mentioned reading the instructions. It'll tell you typically to mix the contents in 2 liters of water. So you want to actually measure 2 liters of water out. Don't eyeball it. And the other thing that's really important is you want to mix it up probably at around about 43, 45 degrees Celsius. And you want to be fairly accurate in this, because you want to be warmer than the calf, but you don't want it to be so hot that you're going to burn the calf. So you want it to be just warmer than the calf so that it cools down a little bit and it meets the calf's body temperature. So, you know, people get into all sorts of things about this. In a perfect world, I'd like you to use the thermometer to check the water temperature. I know not a lot of people are going to do that. But like, hot bath water is probably, you know, if you can put your finger in it, it doesn't burn your finger. that's okay. But you don't want this stuff super hot, and you certainly don't want it too cold, because it'll just add to the problems.
Yeah, good point. It's another advertisement for preventing this. I don't know if there's anything more heavy-duty work involved than dealing with calf scours in the middle of a calving season. You're yep. already tired. You just double your workload all of a sudden. It's another ad for prevent this from happening in the first place, and don't have to deal with all this.
And it also speaks to that we know this treatment works. It's the only treatment that works, but it's a treatment that sucks.
Exactly. So we've got lots of various brands of commercial electrolytes made just for calves. And usually your local vet clinic will carry some very good products and they can recommend those to you. So usually that's not an issue, but maybe just talk briefly about what are some of the things that are in there that we should look for.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to what we were talking about, these calves are missing. So almost any electrolyte, if you look at it, you're going to see that it's got glucose in it for energy, but also because it's what drives the water into the bloodstream. You're going to see salt. You're going to see potassium. You're probably going to see some amino acids in there as well. That's pretty typical. And then finally, you're going to see an organic acid. And I know this makes no sense, an organic salt. So generally, you're going to see something like acetate or propionate. And that's really, really important. And I don't want to get into the biochemistry of it, but what you need to understand is that stuff absorbs into the bloodstream. And then the livers and the tissues convert that to bicarbonate, that bicarbonate that you need to correct the acidosis. We did many years ago have electrolytes with bicarbonate in them, but they don't work as well, and they really screw up milk absorption. And that's why we use these newer products. The other thing to be aware of when we talk about calf scours products is they generally come in two types. So there's regular and HE. HE is high energy. It just has a lot more glucose in it, a lot more sugar. There are times where I might recommend that. But especially if they're still on the mother, I would just use the basic one, because the milk's going to provide the sugar, the fat, and everything else. And the HE is, to be honest, more expensive. So I would buy the bulk standard one. HE has some value, but it's not my first choice. I don't know if you've ever got a feeling on that, John, but that's always been my recommendation.
No, I agree. And in most cases, your local vet's going to give you the best recommendation for your specific situation. But it's important to know that even with the HE, that's not enough energy to support a calf. And we used to see dairy calves that we used to be sort of an old recommendation, oh, take them off milk for a while. We'd see them almost starve to death if they were treated with oral electrolytes too long.
Yeah, even the HE, that's really important. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because I should have said the old recommendation was to take them off milk. The new recommendation is to keep them on milk as much as possible, because it really speeds that healing and you get much faster recovery if you keep them on milk. So even when they're in a vet clinic, we'll start bottle feeding them milk.
So we used to get questions about homemade electrolyte solutions all the time, and people would say, can I make my own, et cetera, et cetera. I don't seem to hear that quite as much as I used to. Maybe it's just because scours is less common. Is that an option, or is that even viable?
No, it isn't. It really isn't. There are recipes that exist that have been used in the third world and developing nations for human babies, because nothing else is available. And while those, you could argue, are better than nothing, what they don't do is contain the bicarbonate portion. And that's what calves really, really need. And as I mentioned earlier, adding bicarbonate to the fluids doesn't do what we need it to do. So, you know, unless you've got a pharmacy at home and you're going to start buying raw materials, which nobody's going to do, buy the sachets. It's actually safer. It's more effective. So, the homemade fluids really don't achieve anything.
No, I agree. Well, I've left this question till near the end, but what about antibiotics? We've got scours, pills, we've got injectable antibiotics. A lot of producers want to give these sick calves antibiotics because that's what we do with other diseases. Is there any benefit?
So I understand why they want to give it, because the calf's sick, right? And they don't want to give electrolytes because electrolytes suck. They want to give a pill or an injection because that's so much easier than two or three stomach tubings a day. And so that I know they want to use antibiotics, but it goes back to that first question you asked me about what is causing the diarrhea. So it's mainly rotavirus, which is a virus, coronavirus, which is a virus, and cryptosporidium, which is a parasite, and antibiotics don't work against any of them. And so while there is this desire to want to use an antibiotic, the reality is, yes, we used to have products on the market, but to be honest, it was a little bit bad advertising and everything else. We did used to see that E. coli, but antibiotics don't work against rotavirus. They don't work against coronavirus. They don't work against cryptosporidium. And so antibiotics aren't going to do you any good. And oftentimes people think, oh, antibiotics or fluids? No, it's not a choice. It's not a choice. The antibiotics won't work. The fluids will stop the calves dying and give them a chance to recover on their own. And so I know it goes, you said it so beautifully, that the best treatment is not to get the disease, because the disease sucks. So, antibiotics aren't going to help. They're not an alternative to fluids. And I think we as veterinarians have got much, much better about trying to explain this to people, because everybody always wanted the Scours pills. Oh, we used to have Scours pills. They work so well. No, they never really did anything, to be honest with you. So I know it's an unpopular opinion, but we know based off everything we know about these diseases that antibiotics are not going to be beneficial.
Yes, and we know that really the ultimate treatment is electrolyte and fluid therapy, and we've got to do that no matter what. So well put. Maybe just before we finish off, if you want to summarize what you think the most important aspects of somebody is dealing with a diarrhea outbreak in their neonatal calves, what are the most important aspects that they have to keep in mind as they're dealing with that?
Well, actually, it's something we haven't talked about, but I will just jump in here because it's something to consider, which is that cryptosporidium is zoonotic. That means it can spread to humans. And it is nasty. Like, getting crypto will give you a whole new understanding for how sick your calves are. So I know a lot of people who've been around livestock all their life are possibly immune to it. I've seen enough farmers over the years who said, I've been around cows all my life, I'm sure I've had it before, only to discover that they haven't had it before. So, personal hygiene is really important, washing your hands. If you've got anybody who's sick in the house, if you've got kids around the house, you've got to impress on people how important it is to wash your hands, because it's really easy to get crypto and it's nasty. So just remember that one. As far as dealing with the calf scours, look for the calf that can't get away from you, the calf that's slow to get up, the calf that you can catch that's got some staining on the back end. If you can catch hold of that calf, look in the mouth, look at the eyes, pinch the skin on the neck. If they're dehydrated, give them some fluids. And give them fluids ideally twice a day until you can't catch them anymore. As they start to go downhill, you may want to bring them into a barn. You may want to nurse them more aggressively, treating them up to four times a day. And if you get a calf that can't lift its head, that doesn't have any tongue mobility, you're going to have to talk to your veterinarian. And I'm glad you brought it up, John. There are some other ways to treat it. The veterinarian may be able to treat it on farm. You may be able to treat it in the back of a truck and send it home an hour later. And that can really reduce the costs. They don't have to be hospitalized. My estimate of treatment was for hospitalized calves, and they don't all have to be hospitalized. You can get a catheter in a vein, run fluids in super fast, and you can get them out the door in an hour or two, and that can really reduce the cost. And finally, if you're having a storm, if you've got a ton of scouring calves, talk to your veterinarian, because finding out what you're dealing with can really impact how you manage the cases and can give you information that it may be too late for this year, but that's the information that you can take on to next year to try and avoid this happening again.
Yeah, good point. And there are some other unusual causes like salmonella that are more serious, and you may need some diagnostic work done to figure that out. Your veterinarian may need to do a postmortem or take some samples from some calves. So there are some things there that they may need to do to sort out whether it's one of those more complicated cases of diarrhea. I should add the cryptosporidia, it's a good point that is zoonotic. And we've seen some outbreaks where we almost had to treat every calf with IV fluids if we were going to save them in those kind of outbreaks. Yes. They were really sick. And the local vet would sometimes even train the producer to do some IV fluid therapy on the farm so that they could save some of those calves without having to bring everyone into the clinic.
I can remember a producer whose wife was a nurse getting involved in doing that. Yeah, she was able to do some of the treatments herself. So there are options there for sure.
Good. Well, I will put some of the links to some of these resources on the BCRC website in our show notes and some of those links. Thank you, Chris. Really good information today. Really appreciate you doing this with me.
No, anytime, John. And I think, as I said, the one final parting gesture is to recognize how far the industry has come in the last 30 years. I think we forget that sometimes. This is, you know, I occasionally have people at the vet school going, oh, you know, I miss those scaring calves. They were such good teaching cases. You know, and bemoaning the fact, but it's actually an incredible success story for, in many respects, Western Canada, because Vito was heavily involved in this. A lot of the research was done at the vet school here in Saskatoon, and it's made an incredible impact in welfare and health of calves. Like, the industry and the veterinarians have worked together to not eradicate a disease, but certainly reduce the impact.
Yes, good point. We've come a long way, and this is a very controllable disease now. Again, I refer back to Elizabeth Homorowski's podcast episode I did with her and some of the great stuff that she talked about there for prevention. I think we are doing a good job of dealing with this. So good point. Thanks again, Chris.
You're very welcome, Joe. Bye for now.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to all of you for listening to the podcast. Thanks again to my guest, Dr. Chris Clark. Thank you as well to our sponsors, the Alberta Beef Producers and the Beef Cattle Research Council. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions or comments or would like to suggest topics that you'd like to see covered in future episodes, please email us at bchnpodcast@gmail.com. Take care until next time.